Welcome everyone to another episode of the Process Sensation Spectacular. And apparently this is episode number 9. We struggled over figuring out which one it is, but we got our act together and we're ready to record now. So today we are very, very happy to have an amazing guest who I had a chance to meet at the Image Expo this year and had a quick chat with her. We have Blair Butler on today. Blair is an extremely talented and diverse writer whose career resume includes television, stage, and comic writing. She started out as a writer behind the popular G4 Network program X-Play, a comedic news program and sketch show about video games, and then went on to host her own comic-focused program called Fresh Ink. And on that, she talked about her favorite comic recommendations and industry news. And then, late 2011, she made a huge splash with her creator-owned series, Heart, with her artistic collaborator, Kevin Mellon. This series was a personal favorite of mine, and one I've recommended on the show a few times. And it's my honor to invite Blair to our podcast and share her process with us today. Welcome, Blair. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, guys, thank you so much for having me. That intro was so nice. I'm totally undeserving of all of it.
It's funny because we've had a few guests on, and we had Joe Casey, and I had quite the intro written up for him because Joe Casey's done everything. That guy's written everything. And,
yeah.
And he just had to take a breath after. He's like, man, I had no idea I did that much stuff. But yeah, we really appreciate you coming on today. We just kind of want to get into, you know, a lot of these podcasts talk about, you know, reviewing comics, but we are obviously a writing podcast, and we just want to start talking to you about your history with writing and where your interest in writing began.
Oh, yeah. So I think ever since I was a kid, I dabbled. I wrote little comic books as a kid. Lots of dinosaurs, lots of zombies. But I started writing for a living when I was still in college, which was kind of crazy. To make a really long meandering story short, my senior year in college, a guy who worked at the Second City in Chicago did a Second City style sketch comedy show with people at my college, and I basically auditioned for it as a writer. And the weird thing about Second City is you're very much a writer, performer, improviser. I am a really terrible, horrible actor, so I begged to only for the most part do writing. And they actually liked the sketches that I wrote for that show. And at the time, I was an English major with absolutely no job prospects whatsoever. I was actually the only thing that I sort of had maybe that I was going to be able to do was do a teaching English in Japan, like JET program type thing. And this guy, Joe Keefe, who ran the Second City's, he ran a division of the Second City called the Business Theater, was like, hey, how would you like to write comedy for a living? And I was like, that sounds awesome. And so that's what I did directly out of college. I was writing corporate sketch comedy, which sounds like an oxymoron, but actually was at kind of that time was one of the most lucrative parts of the Second City business. And so to be, 20 and paying all your bills, your rent, everything from writing comedy was amazing. And from there, I sort of started doing stand-up, which got me kind of out to LA, where I worked horrible jobs. I worked in a warehouse. I worked on a not very good Bruce Willis movie. As an art department PA. I had a couple PA jobs that were so bad that the worst one, I had to scale. It sounds like a joke, but they had this production company that I was working for. Like, you know the scene at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark where they have all everything's boxed up? They had that, but with headshots for reality show casting, and they needed a box that was at the top of a wall of this huge sort of cavernous warehouse. And so I had to climb the boxes like Spider-Man and then climb across the top to get this headshot. And it was basically covered in mouse poop. And I came down that day looking not unlike Tim Robbins in Shawshank Redemption with this like look on my face. And it was the only day in my entire tenure as a PA that they ever sent anyone, including myself, home early. They were like, you just go. You just leave.
PA work is hard.
So basically, I was doing stand-up during that time, and randomly this job writing for X-Play in San Francisco kind of came up, and I got that job. I wrote basically an entire episode of the show from scratch, and I lied. I said I knew a lot more about video games than I thought I did, or than I actually did, honestly. I basically had played Grand Theft Auto, I think, 3, and I had played Metal Gear Solid 2, and I had played some Resident Evil games, and I just bullshitted my way, if it's okay to say that, through the interview, and wrote a couple sample shows, and they actually hired me. And from there, I wound up bouncing from that show to Attack of the Show, and they needed someone who not only would write for the show, but also could do some on-camera stuff covering comics. And they had auditioned a bunch of people, and then finally one of the producers was like, hey, there's this lady nerd that works in the cubicles. She does seem to know a lot about comics. And so that's how I bungled my way into being on cable television. Expanded cable television.
I'm really interested to know, Blair, I think I first heard about you through Fresh Ink, and I really liked your reviews, and I was, very impressed with the amount of stuff you read. You just read a lot, and I also liked a lot of the stuff that you would review, but I was curious, were you writing comics, like, for a while, or was Heart something that you kind of, it was something relatively new to tackle?
Heart is the first comic I have ever written. Truthfully, like aside from like flip books when you're a kid and you're six and you have crayons, I read comics.
That's still how I operate, but
I read comics and loved comics, and in a nutshell, it was the comic I wanted to read, and no one was writing, and I kind of kept thinking, oh, someone will do this, and no one ever did, and I finally thought, why not? Why not give this a shot? Because I'd been, writing TV and some narrative TV and, a lot of kind of live variety show style TV. And I would say that I had, while I'm not confident in a lot of my writing, I had, I think, an irrational confidence that I could do that, that I could write a comic, which I think you have to have, or else you will immediately second guess yourself and never try.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You've mentioned Heart a little bit here. Why don't you just tell the listeners, if they haven't had a chance to pick it up yet, what your series is about?
Sure. On the surface, it's a comic about a young mixed martial arts, an MMA fighter named Orin Rooster Redman. It's kind of about his career trajectory through the world of cage fighting. But really, that's sort of, to me, thematically, it's a lot about a coming of age story. It's about finding your place in the world. And it's about finding something that you love, that you want to be able to do for the rest of your life, and discovering that perhaps you're never going to be as good as the next guy, no matter how hard you try.
It's funny because we talked about it on our last show, and that was one of the things I was really happy with, that I really expected it to go, the way that, most stories would go with that kind of story. And you totally changed it up in the end and made it mean something completely different, but didn't change the narrative at all. And I thought it was such a good series, and I hate you for the fact that it was the first comic book you wrote. Damn you.
I know.
Thank you. I will bask in your hatred. I appreciate that.
Sorry, Curtis. And you've always been a fan of MMA, obviously, which is
I have been. It is kind of weird. I also, for me, I host an MMA segment on the show as well, so it was like this weird peanut butter and chocolate thing where I was like, hey, I cover these two things for a living. It would be awesome to put them together. And I kind of knew, I pretty much knew from the moment I thought of doing this what the first six pages and what the very last two pages were going to be. Like, those were kind of the first things I wrote. I knew it was going to be four issues. I knew where it would start. I knew where it would end up. But the middle, I kind of had to fill out. And the one thing that doing four issues was great, but it also there were sort of examinations of other tertiary characters that are introduced in the series that I had these really grand ideas of, you know, fleshing them out, and it was just I didn't have the page space, and you know, and poor amazing Kevin Mellon, the artist who worked on the series, you know, I think for both of us, four issues was what we always planned on doing, and we really stuck to that.
So how did we mentioned Calvin Mellon, you brought him up now. How did all these pieces come together? I mean, obviously you had written the script, but how did these pieces come together to make the series?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if I've talked about it in a ton of detail before. I think I've probably been like a little bit vague, but truthfully what happened was I decided that I wanted to do this. I wrote, I basically wrote a pitch, and I wrote it in like a TV format because, I write, TV pitches sometimes. So, I wrote it in that format and I sent it to a friend of mine who works in comics and said, "Hey, does this even look presentable and like something I could give, to Image?" And he said, "Yeah, the pitch is great, but obviously they're going to want six finished pages." And I was like, "I totally get that." I rather bullheadedly kind of sent the pitch off anyway to Eric Stevenson at
Wow.
Image. I think because it came through another comics pro that he maybe actually took a look at it and liked it. And at the time, I had talked to an artist who was on board to do it. And through kind of no fault of the artists and no fault of mine, he had like some life gets in the way kind of stuff happen. And so
right.
The whole thing was basically on ice for a while. During that time, I had written the entire first issue. And truthfully, I gave up. Like, it was like one of those things where you're so close and then it kind of all falls apart at the last minute that you're like, I give up. And on New Year's Day last year, I emailed a friend of mine and said, "You know, I'm really bummed because I was so hoping this was going to happen, and I was kind of holding out that this guy was going to be able to do it, and his kind of situation was really tough, so he couldn't, he had to bow out." And it just so happened that the guy I had shot an email to said, "Hey, I just worked with this guy, Kevin Mellon, on a project, and I loved him, and you should really check his work out. And by the way, he lives in Kansas City." And I was like, "This comic is set in Kansas City. That is some weird sort of cosmic thing." So I basically, acting as an intermediary, the other guy gauged if there was any interest whatsoever, and then I more or less sent the entire first issue. So the first issue was completely scripted. He got it, took a look at it, kind of got, you know, and also read the pitch, so he knew where it was going. And Kevin, you know, amazingly stepped up to the plate and took a huge gamble on me because, he had just done S.H.I.E.L.D. At Marvel with Jonathan Hickman. He did a backup story. He had just done Lovestruck with Dennis Hopeless, Dennis Hopeless is now writing at Marvel and you know, is a really talented guy. So I just got incredibly lucky to have Kevin on board. I mean, yes, extremely lucky. And also at a time when I'd given up completely that this would ever get done.
Were you trying to look for artists that had some kind of interest or even knowledge of MMA? Because it is very technical. And what I loved about it was that you got into the technicality of it, not in a way where I didn't understand what was going on, because I know nothing about MMA.
Right. The originally, yes. The really cool thing about Kevin is Kevin just said, you know, I'll be honest, I only have seen a couple fights. You know, he'd only sort of started watching it recently. And so I think he got from me, in the mail, this huge, really technical book of submissions. And it's like a giant encyclopedia of Brazilian jiu-jitsu submissions and sweeps and, you know, wrestling takedowns and stuff. That's basically for people who want to be practitioners who don't maybe have a gym to train at nearby, so they can kind of study the pictures and figure out. And so I think that way he kind of was able to go, if I was saying like it's an arm bar and he's torquing the hips, you know, he could kind of reference that and go and see, oh, this is kind of the positioning. And then also, as soon as he jumped on the project, he started watching a ton of MMA. Oh, so wow. It sort of all coincided with that. And I would get really technical too. Like he would send me pencil sketches and I would say, hey, you know, actually his hands are going to be way lower on the hips if he's going for double leg takedown because, you know. So I'm sure poor Kevin had many days where he was very nice not to, to curse my name.
Well, I remember when we had a chance to talk at Image Expo, we had kind of a brief conversation about how, you know, you actually had friends that are in MMA and they're fighters.
Yeah.
Did you go to them a lot for your own research, or was that you just knew from, you know, spending a lot of time in the community?
No, I actually, one friend of mine who, is actually an Easter egg in the book, a guy, Derek Johnson, I went to his fights, his amateur fights, and Oren's first fight is kind of very, very loosely based on his, in the sense, actually, it's Oren's first professional fight in the comic, because I remember this thing. I was talking to him about it the other night. We were watching the John Jones Rashad Evans UFC a couple nights ago, and a friend at the party was saying, Derek, you fight like you're such a normal looking guy. And I said, you should have seen his first opponent. This was Derek's first ever fight. And he comes out and the guy has tattoos going up his neck onto his face. And I literally looked at him and like said the worst thing that you can say to anyone who's about to go out and fight, which was, I looked at him with this panic look in my eyes and go, we're still going to love you no matter what happens. Because I thought this guy's going to murder him. And Derek knocked him out. It was amazing. So he TKO'd the guy. And wow. So, you know, there was a lot of sort of seeing the amateur scene through his eyes. And then I have a couple friends who are pro fighters, one who was in the UFC at the time and one who's still in the UFC. And for something that happens in issue 3, a submission, I said, hey, anywhere other than women's MMA, because in women's MMA right now, just as a slight detour, there's this really dominant champion named Ronda Rousey, who is an Olympic medalist. She won an Olympic medal in judo. And what she does is she'll do a judo throw transition to armbar. And it's so slick and seamless that I've never seen anyone pull that off in competition in like a pro level guys competition. And so I was sort of talking to these two friends who happened to be in the same weight class in the UFC. And I said, hey, separately, like, have you ever seen that happen? And the one guy goes, oh yeah, that happened to me a couple years ago. And the other guy goes, and I did that to a guy a couple years ago. And I was like, I'm going to have to Wikipedia and make sure they didn't do that to each other. Which they didn't. But yeah, I was really lucky in that I could kind of ask them if I was doing anything horribly wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Another thing that I was thinking about is like you've been on television quite a bit, and you've been in that community. You obviously said you've also done stand up, so you're used to being in front of audiences and working in front of people. How was taking this project and putting it out to the world? Was there any comparisons, or was it completely alien to you?
No. It is. Well, the thing is, despite the fact that I'm occasionally on TV, I am truly socially awkward, like truly. And if you watch early editions of Fresh Ink, it's a train wreck. I mean, it really is. It is a deer in the headlights. You know, it's very awkward. And I try not to watch those because actually watching myself kind of freaks me out. Like you really have to disassociate and not kind of acknowledge that it's you, especially because sometimes I'll go into edit sessions if we're trying to, you know, line up images with something I'm talking about in a review. And it's like, I hate looking at myself. And they always manage to freeze frame it on like me making like a weird, you know, herp derp face. So the editors love me. But you know, putting the comic out there is the thing that's both exhilarating and terrifying about it is like working in TV is very collaborative. You know, you kind of don't have the final say. And I really, it doesn't matter what level on the totem pole you are. It is so rare that anyone is sort of big enough in TV in any format to have the final say on kind of how they're presented or what they say. You know, there's always editing. And for me, the great thing about Heart was I didn't have an editor. I just got to sort of say whatever I wanted, which also meant that if people hated it, like, it was just purely on me. Like if people hate Fresh Ink or something because they don't like the way I look, like, I can't really do anything about that, you know? Like, that's, I look the way I look. I can't really, you know, change that, you know, short of, like, a Brazil, like, face stretching or something crazy. you know, with a comic, it was very much, you know, it felt very personal to me. So it is tough if someone hates what you're writing, because that you sort of feel like that's something you do have control over. So yeah, it is terrifying. I will say that, especially being someone who, you know, has been critical of other work, in that field, you just feel like, wow, I am not only opening myself up to maybe I really suck, but also, like, people may go, wow, if you write crap like that, like, what right do you have to pass judgment on anything? You know, Roger Ebert famously made Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. So,
right, exactly.
That was, like, his one and only screenwriting credit, I think. So it's, you know, it's very scary. It's a bit daunting.
Jeremy, I've been kind of taking up all the space here. Go ahead.
I was just really curious. I guess because, you know, this is a writing podcast and this was your first comic. Do you have, moving forward with future projects, do you have a writing process that you kind of adhere to, or was this kind of just learning as you went along?
You know what? Here's the weird thing. I feel like there was a process that, I absolutely love writing comics because for me, the framework is really set. Like, if you're writing a feature, then you can kind of break it into, like, a three-act structure and, like, try and hammer stuff home. But it feels like it's got all these moving parts and it's so huge. It's like this enormous accordion, right?
Exactly.
But for comics, and specifically for a four-issue miniseries or for an ongoing series where, you know, you're breaking it into, like, six-issue arcs, to me, there is something so reassuring about knowing, okay, I knew from the beginning what the last page of Heart was. You know, I knew from the beginning what the, you know, first, like, six pages were, right? So if I know that he has to hit these markers and at the end of the third issue, you know, he's going to have this big kind of upheaval moment, then I know where issue four starts and where it ends, and I know where issue three has to end. So issue two, you know, the end of issue two, it all just really balances itself out. And then what you wind up doing, it becomes to me like a puzzle. Like, I
yes,
have this much
exactly.
dialogue on the page and I don't want to over clutter a page. So it's, you know, I have to make this breathe. And I think, you know, issue three got really sweaty in the sense that there were a couple of pages where I was like, oh my Lord, I've got to let this breathe. And in issue four, there was a page where I just thought Kevin's art really communicated things so well that I just ripped all the text out of it.
Nice.
It just didn't need it, you know, and I would be totally remiss if I did not thank our long suffering and incredibly talented letterer, Chris Crank. Sorry, I hiccuped at his name, but Crank, he's amazing. And, you know, one of the things that I always wanted in the comic were fight stats, because that's such a huge part of fights. You know, stats, it's this guy's a boxer with a, you know, he's like a boxer with a wrestling background, or, you know, his walkout song. Like, I love the idea of people's walkout songs being listed.
Yeah, that was a good touch.
Yeah.
It tells you so much about them, to me, that their song choice. So I wanted to have that in there, and Kevin and Crank kind of worked together to fit that into the narrative, because I knew it was going to take up a ton of space, and Crank's awesome, man. He's so great.
And what I think is really a testament to, you know, your first writing situation is that you're describing a process of understanding how to write a comic with the art like you've done it thousands of times before. And I was just curious, is that from your years of reading comics, or were you looking at other script formats when you were deciding to write it for the first time?
You know, I think part of it is I have read a lot of comics, but what really helped me, so, you know, I think the advice that I usually give people is like, hey, if you're going to write a comic, you know, go out and buy like script books, you know, like the, for example, when they have like the director's cut of Blackest Night issue one or whatever, and it's got all the pages in the back that kind of shows you Geoff Johns' script, or you know, the same thing for The Walking Dead, you know, the first issues reprinted with the script right in the back, you know, they have those sort of director's cut editions. I looked at a lot of those, and the format, because I was sort of used to writing in a final draft format, for whatever reason, it was hard to kind of wrap my mind around it until I read, there's a guy named John Roy who has a comic that has not come out yet, but it's going to be coming out from Image, which I guess says a lot about the trajectory of comics, because somehow heart's done, but his comic's going to be really cool. His format was so clear and concise to me that I'm sure he got it from someone else, but it just immediately I went, oh yeah, this makes total sense, which is every page, you know, is its own page on the computer, you know, page one, and then you do once you list how many panels and the dialogue and everything else, you know, you start a whole new second page clean, which I think hopefully it's helpful for the artist as well. But his format I just found really conducive to breaking the story.
When you mentioned that, like I said, I really liked how you had the entrance music for each of the characters when they were going into a fight. Did you have your own kind of soundtrack that you listened to while writing this series?
Yeah. The first song in the comic is, Social Distortion's Reach for the Sky. And that's Orin's sort of song as he goes out for his third pro fight at the beginning of the series. And I played that. And then as I went along, the songs, a lot of it was stuff I had or stuff that I was listening to. And I would kind of find things like there's a Block Party song called The Prayer. And I had it on a mix, but hadn't heard it in a while. And when I was listening to it, I thought, God, this would be the greatest walkout song for someone who really needs to win a fight. And it's so unconventional as a walkout song because, you know, a lot of guys want music like Kanye West's Amazing, where it really pumps them up, you know. But I think it was perfect in the sense of the character's trajectory. Like if you sort of map all his songs out, you can kind of follow the arc of his progress through the songs he's choosing to play. Because so much of it I think is where fighters' emotions are. Like there's a character that's a tomato can in the comic, and you know, being at like a tomato can in boxing is like, you're a gimme fight. You're like a guy that's not very good, a guy that's got a ton of losses on his record that people pad their resumes with. And that guy has, I think his song is Charlie Walker's Gonna Hang Up My Gloves, which is just like, it's like kind of honky tonk song about just like giving up, which I thought would be really an appropriate choice for him. But yeah, it was really fun. And also, you know, there's weight cutting is a huge part of mixed martial arts. And so, Tools sweat seems perfect since you spend a ton of time sitting in the sauna hating your life. So yeah, it was really fun. And I think Kevin actually, Kevin Mellon is going to do like a Spotify list of all the songs.
Nice.
Which is pretty great. Kevin's just such an extraordinarily talented guy. I was so lucky to work with him. Like I have heard from so many people, and I'm sure you guys have had experiences with this, you know, sort of horror stories about, you know, collaborations gone awry or people dropping out, or, you know, you get six pages done and then the publisher says, oh, but we don't like the art. You know, I mean, Eric Stevenson right from the beginning said, oh my God, I love Kevin Mellon, you know, he's fantastic. And I just thought, oh, thank God. because I thought, well, you know, people love his work, and you know, I think he carried me because this was my first comic. So I mean, I just feel so indebted to him.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, there were some really great panels, and I think one of the great things about him is like he got the technical part of the fighting. I've heard that all over the place, but I mean, for me, I don't really watch MMA at all. It's not something that I'm really into, but he had some really great facial responses, and like you said, you know, I'm not sure where you're talking about where you cut out the dialogue, but there were a lot of moments where, you know, there didn't need to be anything said because he just carried it with the framing and the way he used the camera.
Yeah, so I agree with you. He did a great job on that book.
Yeah, there were the dialogue was, there's a panel in issue 4 where he's leaving and there's a trash can and he's throwing something into the trash can. And I had originally had a caption on there and I was like, I don't need this. Like, I don't need this at all. Like, Kevin perfectly communicates what, you know, everything that needs to be said about this. Like, it didn't even need the caption. And, you know, and a lot of it too, for a first time book, I just was trying to be really conscious of not clogging things, including his gray art, up with captions and word balloon. You know, I mean, it's interesting.
A lot of new writers do that. I did that when I first wrote something, because I felt like I need to get the story across. But, you know, until you see art from your pages, like, and it's really amazing because you really do understand it, and then it really worked. Really good.
And it helped because I had seen another comic that was like a first time comic that was very it was kind of so dialogue or caption sort of intensive that you know, the incredible art was almost like smothered under boxes, and so that was like a good wake up call, I guess, for me as well.
So when you actually sit down to write, what kind of environment do you put yourself in? Like, do you have like a desk or do you go to a coffee shop? What's your perfect writing zone?
Oh, man. I mean, the thing is, I am a huge procrastinator. I'm terrible. And the thing that's crazy is my day job, you know, to sort of contextualize what I do on the show, there are three writers on the show besides myself. And we come in every morning, you know, around 8:30, we basically watch a bunch of viral videos that are going to be on the show, segments that are going to be on the show, and then we write, you know, an hour of live host copy, which will change throughout the day. But, you know, I have to write on demand, and I'm really trained by virtue of working in live TV for so long that, like, if I sit down in the morning with a cup of coffee, like, I need to start writing then. The problem is if I'm not sort of at a desk to do it, if I'm at home, which is when I, you know, have the time to do comic stuff, you know, it's like the dog that has to circle 5 times before you it lies down, you know, like I have to clean everything, I have to straighten stuff up, like, oh, I better get that art framed, like, you know, everything I can do to stay away from it. And usually lately what I've forced myself to do is I'll put on like a really great movie soundtrack. I think lately I've been listening to like Inception or nice. Tron Legacy or you know, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Social Network, stuff like that. Just put it on something that does not have vocals, some of the Battlestar Galactica soundtracks, and just start writing to that and put it on repeat, and then just really force myself to sort of sit there. And sometimes I'll put a timer down to like kind of ease myself in. Like, you have to trick yourself and go, I'm only going to write for 15 minutes. And then hopefully, you know, 3 hours later you go, oh, I guess I've been doing this a long time. But you really have to fool yourself.
And would you say your process, you're always kind of looking, because I think that, you know, everybody that we've talked to on the show is kind of a process junkie. And do you see what other people are doing and think that, are you trying to incorporate stuff, or is it, are you pretty comfortable with your situation now?
Oh, with other people's writing processes?
Yeah, like this, the scripting and everything.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll be really impressed. Like, I think, again, when I was mentioning John Roy's comic scripts, like the way they were written, it just felt like it instantly made sense to me. And I'd looked at, you know, Warren Ellis scripts and Alan Moore scripts, and it's like, I think something different works for everybody. But when you see someone else who's using a format that just instantly works for you, that's when you go, okay, I'm sticking with this. And you know, right now I'm doing some more comic stuff, and so I've definitely been sticking to the format that worked with Heart for sure, because I feel like, okay, this works because I got 4 issues out.
So you mentioned that, I mean, we're coming up to the end here, so you mentioned that you're working on some other stuff. Is there anything that you want to talk about or you can talk about that's coming up in the future?
Yeah, a couple things. Let's see. So the one that I can definitely talk about is I'm doing a 6-page story for the new ongoing Womanthology anthology. I said anthology twice in a row, but whatever. but yeah, they're doing a new series. The first book was Heroic, and the second book, I think it's okay to say, is Space. And so I'm doing a 6-page story for that. The format is, it could not be more different than Heart, which is great. Like, different genre, you know, different style, just everything's really different, which I'm really excited about. I'm doing a 6-page backup story in, another Image comic, and the creator's going to announce that, so I will not, ruin his reveal, but I will say that it is, again, totally different genre from both Heart and the Woman Mythology piece, and tonally completely different from both of them, like so tonally different, which I'm really excited about. And then I actually adapted something for a friend who is in fact, an MMA fighter. I adapted something, that he had, into comic book format, which was kind of a cool experience for me, because it's both that and the Image project, you're talking about someone else's IP, you know, so you are intellectual properties, but you know what I mean, they it's their characters and their world, so you know, you're just very much trying to serve them, to serve those characters, to write in their voice, and also, you know, to make sure that that they, as the creators and the people, you know, bringing you on to do the work, are satisfied. So that's been a really good experience as well.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Jeremy, did you have a one final question or?
No. That's really exciting. I'm excited to hear that you've got stuff lined up for the future.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping to have a lot more, you know, the TV, the live TV thing is like a hamster wheel, like you're constantly running, and there, and so to me, like, the biggest challenge is like, how do you carve out time outside of, you know, the 60 hours a week that you're, you know, the 50 to 60 hours a week that you're doing live TV. And honestly, convention season was wild this year, because I covered a bunch of stuff for G4 and Attack of the Show, and I also went to a couple cons, which I have to say was so awesome. It was great. Like, I had a fantastic time at, you know, Image Expo. I covered WonderCon for Attack of the Show, which was great. Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City was awesome. Like, to me, it's so great to get to spend time with other creators, in a non-host capacity, if that makes any sense. Like, it's really fun to just get to talk to people and get to know people. It's been really amazing.
Yeah, the Image Expo was probably one of my favorites this year, and it just had this real focus on kind of independent creator-owned stuff, and there was a real excitement from the people there. I often find that some of these bigger shows, you just kind of get drowned out from the Hollywood and the you know, the big guys, the big two that have all these big announcements, but it was nice to have fans that were really excited about these Image projects, so I love that show.
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting because WonderCon, you know, obviously I covered a lot of comic stuff, which was really, really cool, because we got to cover the giant Wally Wood book, the artist edition, the IDW one that's just huge, and some of Joe Hill's stuff. But then, you know, we were also doing like junket lines for Prometheus and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. So there was just a huge movie presence at WonderCon. But, you know, Image Expo and Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City are just like pure comics. It was really cool. And to see at Image Expo the access that people who went to that con had to like A plus level creators was amazing. You know?
Yeah. It was a really great. I mean, I just went to, you know, just see Curtis and some friends and just to be there because it was the first con for Image, and it was like comic creator owned centric, which was just exciting for the future of comics, exciting for everybody that is part of Image. So yeah, it was really, really fun.
Yeah, and Eric Stevenson and Todd McFarlane both gave like literally like the Braveheart speeches during some of those panels. Like after a Todd McFarlane speech, I wanted to like, you know, not grab a sword, but like grab a laptop and run out like right immediately, like, you know, paint my face blue and then just start typing wildly, because it was so energizing. It's really exciting to see people so amped about making comics. And, you know, it's definitely like a very dicey proposition financially for anyone. You know, it's a lot of sacrifice on everyone's part to kind of take those gambles, and it's just so but it's so freaking rewarding. Like, it blows me away.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Well, let's wrap up. I'll ask you one quick question, and sure. then we'll end up the show. So it's kind of a two-in-one question. What is a genre that you really, really are excited to write that you haven't done yet? And what is one that would just terrifies you, but you would do it anyway?
Let's see. I would love to write, and I'm not currently writing, but espionage. And as far as terrifies me, licensed superheroes. Only because, you know, it, to me, the real challenge is, like, what is there new to say? You know, to me, the thing that makes Scott Snyder so great right now is that he's telling new Batman stories that feel authentically new. And that is very tough for a character with, you know, several decades of continuity.
Yeah. No doubt. Well, thanks so much, Blair. You brought some really, really interesting ideas to the show, and appreciate you taking out the time. And, you know, hopefully we can connect up in the future when you have a new project out.
Absolutely. And thank you guys for taking the time to listen to me ramble like a nut.
Entertaining as always. All right. Well, we just want to send a thank you to the Image Addiction crew for continuously hosting our program. And to you, the listeners, thank you for tuning in every few weeks whenever we get the time to do this bloody show. And we have, as always, some other great creators lined up. Brian Lindsay has a very exciting announcement about one of his upcoming conversations that he's going to have. And stay tuned. If you have any questions or you want us to talk to anybody, send us a message on Twitter or on our Facebook page, and we will see what we can do to get them on. And thank you so much for listening.